And now in Of Life and Men, Howard Stableford uncovers the links between the Pulitzer Prize-winning American author John Steinbeck and a rock pool on the Californian coast.
If you look around our feet real closely, which is the trick in tide pooling, is to get down low and spend a little time just gazing, we see all kinds of living things right here. Trying to stay in the shade are little snails the size of a large garden pea, called a litterine or periwinkle.
Right, yes.
And here by my left foot is a little rock pool.
Yep, let's get down
there. A permanently wet pool. And we find other things living in the pool, like small black turban snails. They need a little more moisture than the periwinkles do.
Pulitzer Prize-winning American author John Steinbeck might well have gazed into this very rock pool on the coast of Monterey, California in the 1930s. As he watched the interplay of marine life in this intertidal pool, it occurred to him that human communities were connected in similar ways. Now, novelists find inspiration in many forms, but what was remarkable and little known about Steinbeck was that in his heart, he was a marine biologist. Allusions to his ecological thinking, the connections between man and nature, are peppered through many of his novels like East of Eden, The Grapes of Wrath, and Of Mice and Men. Although Steinbeck dabbled in marine biology courses as a student, it wasn't until he moved to the Monterey area of the Pacific coast that literary inspiration truly dawned. And it arrived in the unlikely form of a hard-working, hard-drinking, irascible and intelligent marine biologist named Ed Ricketts. This is the story of an extraordinary friendship that deeply influenced both their lives and work from the moment they met.
They were instantly attracted to one another. I think, you know, sort of a meeting of the minds or a kind of a soulmate.
Susan Schillinglaw is director of the Center for Steinbeck Studies at San Jose State University.
The relationship he had with Ricketts was perhaps the most intimate and most intense of his life. And that includes his wives. I think that Steinbeck writes again and again about the nature and the contours of friendship. All of his books have these male friendships in them. If you think Tom Joad and Casey in The Grapes of Wrath, or Lenny and George in Of Mice and Men, or Doc and the Boys in Cannery Row, they're all this kind of, you know, male bonding. And I think for Steinbeck that was a crucial relationship. He did have three wives. He enjoyed the company of women, but I think there was something intense and very necessary to him that friendship with other men gave him. And I think of all those, Ricketts was definitely the most intense relationship he had and probably the most important relationship. I qualify that some because I think his first wife was very important in shaping the kind of writer he was. But I think Ricketts shaped his ideas, and together they kind of, through dialogue and conversation, I think inspired one another.
And they not only inspired each other's ideas. Ricketts actually turns up in some of Steinbeck's novels.
Steinbeck often includes a Ricketts character in his texts, or a character roughly modeled on Ricketts. He certainly appears as something close to himself in a little short story called The Snake, in Cannery Row, in its sequel Sweet Thursday. But he's also the sort of wisdom character in many of the books. Casey in The Grapes of Wrath, he's slim and Of Mice and Men, he's Dr. Winter in The Moon is Down. He's the character who can always step back and see the whole and not become embroiled in all the agony and the frustration that many of the characters feel.
The real Ed Ricketts ran a small business collecting and selling biological specimens to schools and universities. He lived in his laboratory, squeezed between dozens of sardine canning factories on Monterey's Ocean View Avenue. The lab was the place to hang out for the local bohemian community of artists, writers, poets, as well as fishermen. The street and its inhabitants were later immortalized in Steinbeck's book Cannery Row. But Susan Schillinglaw explains how the book was further influenced by Ricketts' beliefs about ecology.
Its dominant metaphor is a tide pool, and he's looking at Cannery Row, which is a little enclave, a little community on the edge of the Pacific, and he's looking at all the people who live there as if they're specimens, as if they're creatures that he's kind of lifting out of this tide pool and looking at them and then looking at the connections among all these species. So you can see how if you take that metaphor of a scientist studying a tide pool and cataloging specimen and a writer saying, I can take a human community and look at them as a tide pool. That's kind of what he's doing in that book.
We don't have to go far to start seeing additional kinds of critters.
Let's move on down then towards the waterline, clamber over the boulders.
Notice here everything is bigger and now there's more diversity of critters. The black turban snails are the size of a good-sized marble. And when those are eaten by a crab or a starfish, then a hermit crab moves into them.
And that's what I've just picked one out, I think. There's a little hermit crab
in here. Yes. So the turban snails that are moving quickly are doing that because they have a hermit crab in them.
Cannery Row in Monterey in California is a poem, a stink, a grating noise, a quality of light, a tone, a habit, a nostalgia, a dream. Its inhabitants are, as the man once said, whores, pimps, gamblers, and sons of bitches, by which he meant everybody. Had the man looked through another peephole, he might have said saints and angels and martyrs and holy men, and he would have meant the same thing.
Cannery Row still stands today. The canneries have long since closed down, so it remains as a tourist attraction for Steinbeck fans. And there, I met up with local historian Michael Hemp, who gave me a guided tour.
Cannery Row in the 1930s and 40s was the Street of the Sardine, where 16 to 20 canneries and reduction plants that accounted for the fish meal and fertilizer, for which we really provided the world, were shoulder to shoulder here in a canyon of sardine factories.
Why here, though? Why in this particular place?
Because Monterey Bay provided what at the time seemed an unending natural resource. For half a year, there were so many fish, so many sardines in this bay that they could be captured very easily, initially right offshore. And even into the 30s and 40s, seasons here of over 200,000 tons in a six-month season were not uncommon at all.
What was life like here? Was it a tough existence for
people working in the industry? It certainly was. The boats came in, emptied their fish into the buckets and the hoppers that took them into the canneries and started the cooking and the canning process. And this is America, still in the Industrial Revolution, really. There were no unions until the late 1930s, and here in Monterey, the lady stated the packing lines, and everybody was at work as long as it took to can that day's catch. And if it was 6 hours, it was 6 hours. If it was 18 hours, it was 18 hours.
Was Steinbeck attracted then by the place, by the smell, the people, or by Ed Ricketts?
I'd say he was probably captivated by all of it, especially the denizens of Cannery Row, because he wasn't required, nor did he write about the canneries or even the cannery workers. He was more interested in the personalities and the life that went on in the microcosm of the people who lived on the fringes here, the bums, the whores, the madams, the scientists, the neighbors, the artists, pretty ordinary people. Another feature of John Steinbeck's writing, he rarely wrote about anybody of what you would normally consider significance.
Right.
He was writing about every man.
Do you know what's also fascinating about Cannery Row is, although we've said it's all very garish and tourist shops and restaurants and things, if you half close your eyes, you can still get a sense of what it might have been like. In fact, where we're standing now, if we look across the street, there are some buildings that, they're talked about and appear in the novel.
They are actually in the novel, yes.
What can we see?
Well, John didn't write much fiction. He wrote about real people and real places. So we're looking at the Wing Chong Market, which is chapter one of John Steinbeck's Cannery Row. It's the Chinese grocery, the miracle of supply. And next to it is the La Ida Cafe, one of the two bordellos that makes John's book.
Lee Chong's grocery, while not a model of neatness, was a miracle of supply. It was small and crowded, but within its single room, a man could find everything he needed to be happy. Clothes, food, liquor, tobacco, fishing equipment, machinery, boats, cordage, caps, pork chops. You could work out combinations to fit almost any mood.
Well, we've pretty much walked the length of Cannery Row, and we're standing outside a very unassuming brown wooden plank building. There's a row of windows up there, a wooden staircase up to a door halfway up the building, and no signs, no signposts to indicate what this is. And yet, actually, this is one of the most famous landmarks of the whole Cannery Row.
Yes, it is. This is Ed Ricketts' lab.
You've got to know it's here because there are no signs. Why are there no signs? Is it on purpose?
Yes. Over the years, they quit putting up the 800, 800. The numbers that they would put up on the lab would be purloined by Ricketsophiles and Steinbeck fans who wanted to take something of Ed Ricketts' lab home with them.
Well, I tell you, all the tourists are walking straight past this building, but we know it's here, so let's go inside.
Western Biological deals in strange and beautiful wares. It sells the lovely animals of the sea, the sponges, tunicates, anemones, the bivalves, barnacles, the worms and shells, nudibranchs and tectibranchs, the spiked and knobbed and needly urchins, the snapping shrimps, and ghost shrimps so transparent that they hardly throw a shadow. These are all for sale. You can order anything living from Western Biological, and sooner or later you will get it.
Wow. It's wooden inside as well.
Yes, very, very basic.
Wooden floor, wooden walls and ceiling, about, 20 feet long, 15 feet wide. And here's a photo of Ed Ricketts on the wall here and a bookshelf behind.
Pretty much, so the structure is original. Some of the furnishings are not any longer. But one of the originals that I'm very proud to introduce you to is Frank Wright, who
is among the
lab members who have been part of this fantastic landmark. And Frank has the distinction of being one of the two gentlemen in this lab group that actually knew Ed during World War II.
Great to meet you, Frank.
Thank you very much.
What was your first impression of him? What did you know about him?
Well, I didn't know that he was a marine biologist when I first met him. I came in here and wondered what he was doing living in a place that had a sign out in front that said Pacific Biological Laboratories. And I asked him, I said, are you interested in marine biology or something? He said, yes, that's what I am. I'm a marine biologist.
Doc is the owner and operator of the Western Biological Laboratory. Doc is rather small, deceptively small, for he is wiry and very strong, and when passionate anger comes on him, he can be very fierce. He wears a beard, and his face is half Christ and half satyr, and his face tells the truth. Doc has the hands of a brain surgeon and a cool, warm mind. Doc tips his hat to dogs as he drives by, and the dogs look up and smile at him.
Frank Wright gained an insight into what Ed thought about his life being the center of what was to become a hugely successful novel.
One day I came in 1944, and there was a cardboard box. And it was sitting on the table, and it said on the cover, Cannery Row, a novel by John Steinbeck. It was the manuscript for Cannery Row. And I said, Ed, what is this? He said, oh, my God, I didn't want you to see that. I said, well, why not? He said, well, we don't want any advance publicity. John has asked that this be kept very confidential.
Did you turn the pages? Did you have a steep?
No, he wouldn't let me look at it.
Is that right?
I just saw the cover, but I said, well, what's it about? Well, he said, what do you think it's about? It's all about me.
It's interesting that he said it was all about him. That's very important. Did he like it? Did he like
it? He loved it.
It wasn't just Ricketts that appeared in Cannery Row. The Pacific Ocean and the animals that he collected and studied there also starred in the book.
Doc was collecting marine animals at the Great Tide Pool on the tip of the peninsula. It is a fabulous place. When the tide is in, a wave-churned basin, creamy with foam, whipped by combers that roll in. But when the tide goes out, the little water world becomes quiet and lovely. The sea is very clear, and the bottom becomes fantastic, with hurrying, fighting, feeding, breeding animals.
It is a beautifully still and sunny morning here on the Pacific coast of California. We're just about 2 miles south of Cannery Row on the rock pools here on the coastline. There are gulls basking in the sun over here. You might hear the call of a black oyster catcher. And with me is Steve Webster, who's a senior marine biologist at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. We are looking actually, Steve, aren't we, at the Great Tide Pool, as mentioned in Cannery Row. Just describe for me, would you, what the Great Tide Pool is. How big is it? How does it work?
The Great Tide Pool must be pretty close to half an acre. And it's just a little embayment in the rocks that at a low tide is completely cut off from the rest of the Pacific Ocean. That really is the definition of a tide pool, like this one right over here to our left. On this tide level, that water is trapped there higher than where sea level is at the moment. It will become awash with the ocean in a couple of hours when the water returns to that level.
And why is a tide pool particularly interesting to marine biologists?
I think tide pools are of great interest, one, because they are nature's aquaria, if you will, and two, because they're accessible. It's a place that you can go to observe firsthand marine organisms without having to be a scuba